Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
And welcome to episode 370 of Geek Town Radio. I am back this week with...
Hey, howdy, my name is Woody, and this is Andy's room.
Local law enforcement, it's about time you got here. I'm Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger, Universe Protection Unit.
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm very good, David, how are you?
I don't think I've used that one before.
No, that's the one of the four that you haven't used yet, so I'm happy to hear that one.
Excellent. You're back on this week because it is half term. It would normally be a grey week, but he's off on holiday because he's a teacher. So yes, you're here again. What have you been up to the last week?
A couple of different things on my list this week because I was here last week. I've still seen the newer episodes of Servant and Shrinking since then, but those were pretty good episodes. Other than that, the other thing I didn't mention when I was on last time, which is Atlanta finished its fourth and final season some point last year, whenever it was. Absolutely incredible show. I did a podcast about a month or so ago, something like that, and did one of my Why You Should Watch podcasts. The show is very, very short. It's only four seasons each and 10 episodes each, and they're about between 30 to 40 minutes or so per episode. I wanted to particularly point out two episodes in the last season. Now, for the two episodes I'm going to mention, I'm not going to tell you what happens or give any sort of context because it's a bit more of like a surprise. Season 4, episode 6, one of the best episodes of TV I've seen in quite some time. It's one of those episodes of TV that just like really, really stands out. Although the show does have continuing storylines and stuff, there are certain episodes you could probably watch individually.
Yeah.
And I would say this is one of them. So it's season 4, episode 6. You can find the show on Star via Disney Plus or FX if you're in the US. So if you want a sample size of the show and what it's sort of capable of, I would safely say you can watch that without any sort of needing previous knowledge, and it won't spoil anything. And, you know, it's one of those sort of episodes of the show. Right from even like the opening moment of the opening scene to the very, very last part of it, it's just put together like a masterpiece. And there's lots of like little things that happen in the episode. You know, when they talk about some sometimes a show's got an A, B, C or D plot sometimes. You know, it's got different sort of main plots. It's got like its A and its B sort of plot, but it's got lots of other little things and moments that happen in the show. And sometimes you look at little things within an episode and think, oh, that was just a little throwaway kind of fun thing. But it manages to really connect everything together quite spectacularly. So I just wanted to sort of highlight that particular episode. So if you haven't seen any of the show, of course, I'm basically saying that's the best episode of the show. Mm-hmm. Or at least I think it is anyway. Although the whole show is absolutely fantastic. So, and then there's an episode, I think it's episode 8 or 9 of the final season. I will not give any context to it at all, but I started the episode and the episode essentially has nothing to do with anything in the entire show. but it started, and you know when you start an episode of a show and you kind of think, did I play the wrong episode or something? We did that recently with an episode of, I think, The Last of Us. I think it was episode 2, and it had like a weird different start and everything. So it kind of does a bit of that. And you keep thinking, like, okay, how is this tied into Atlanta, the show? And it isn't at all, but it's thematically connected. And by the end of that episode, the important part was by the end of the episode, I kind of understood why it had been included. And then I was glad that it was. Have you seen any of the show at all?
It's one that I keep on waiting to go to start to watch, and other things keep on getting in the way. The episode that you're mentioning, was it done in a sort of documentary format? It was
yes. I don't want to say too much about the episode.
Okay. But... yeah, that is episode 8 of season 4.
Right. That sounds right. Yeah.
I haven't got to it yet. I keep on meaning to watch it, and it's another one on the list of things that I just haven't quite got round to. But yes, it is one that I do want to sit and watch.
Nice. Yeah, that's finished with its fourth and final season. Finished in a very satisfying way anyway. So, and of course, you've got the incredible talent of Donald Glover. And of course, all the rest of the cast, like you've got Zazie Beetz and some other people as well. Really, really good stuff. We had a new Flash trailer.
Yeah, we had a new Flash trailer. I mean, there was a bunch of trailers. I've actually uploaded all the Super Bowl movie trailers are up on the website if you go and look on be somewhere on the front page by the time this goes out. There was a new Guardians trailer, which looks great as well. That is going to be a really interesting one, because the Guardians will not be the same at the end of that. It's making it fairly clear that this formation of the Guardians is over after that. There was a new indie trailer. There was one for Fast X, Scream 6, the new Transformers movie, Creed 3, a few other bits and pieces. There was a very funny, not a movie trailer, but an advert for a crisp called Popcorners, which had the Breaking Bad cast in it.
Oh,
it was
cool.
Bryan Cranston, Aaron Paul, and Raymond Cruz, who played Tuco.
Right.
So it was the three of them doing sort of, instead of cooking meth, they were cooking crisps. So that was quite funny. And yes, I mean, it's always fun to see those together, but to do them in a kind of comedy way, that was quite entertaining. But yes, the Flash trailer. Thoughts?
I liked parts of it. Other parts of it I thought were strange. It's going to be very interesting because over the years, since what, 2018 or so, when this was supposed to come out, this film has been, I can't recall another film that has the public knowledge of being chopped and changed and edited as much as this one has over the years. I mean, if you look at the pitched version of the 2018 film, it is a different film to this, but even within this version of this film, which is the more multiverse Flashpoint version, we've heard over the years of like, oh, they're filming this part and then they're cutting it out and then this is going to happen and then it's not, et cetera, et cetera. One part I found kind of interesting, because you've got Zod in here, who's the same version from Man of Steel. And then Kara shows up, and there was parts where Henry Superman was going to be in this film for a scene or two, and Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman was supposed to be as well. So it's things like that that have been cut out from the film. And I kind of thought, okay, that gives me an indication that, like, from those two elements, will there be weird parts of the story where it seems like, I don't know, Superman was clearly meant to be in here, but he's like a gap in the film or something weird? There's parts to it that are kind of like that. Because I think what the opening of this was supposed to be, and obviously this isn't going to happen, is Barry was supposed to, obviously, does the time travel thing, and Wonder Woman and Superman were supposed to try to stop him, but they cut that out of the film.
Right.
Because I think it's pretty clear that Superman and Wonder Woman are not going to be in this film anyway. It's also some speculation, because initially, when you got the earlier version of this Flashpoint film, like the first version of it, Ray Fisher's Cyborg was going to be in it. He was going to be kind of Flash's or Barry's sort of friend. And now they've got like this second Barry in there. And some people have speculated like that was probably supposed to be the placeholder for Cyborg. So I just wonder if those sorts of issues are going to kind of come up in the film and there's going to be some like missing parts. I also do think, now that we've actually seen parts of Sasha Cully's Supergirl, and we spoke, was it last week, with the whole DCU slate, because people seem to quite like her already, and I think she looks quite cool and everything. It will be very disappointing if she's introduced in this, and then with that origin story-ish version that we described before, if she gets cut out of that because that doesn't like fit her same Supergirl. So there's some things to be worked out. I do think some of this looks quite good, though. It was great to see Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck's Batman in this, especially Ben's, because he's my favourite one. So that was cool, and obviously you got the I'm Batman line, which you probably had to put in there.
Yes.
So that's a nice callback. Some things in here that might work, some things in here that are going to be interesting for like editing and placement and things like that. We'll see what happens with this. What do you think so far?
I was really impressed by the trailer. Obviously, there's the whole controversy thing over Ezra, but you know, moving past that, the trailer itself, what really impresses me is it feels actually like they have quite closely followed the comic book, but made some alterations in the same way that MCU do with their films. You know, like the Infinity Saga in the book isn't exactly the same as the Infinity Saga that we got on screen, because things worked out slightly different. For example, in the book, the super that we see in Flashpoint is Superman. It isn't Supergirl. There is that particular change in there. And Zod isn't in it. In the book, a lot of the turmoil is caused by a war between the Amazons and Atlantis as they're sort of battling for control. I think it kind of makes more sense that it's Zod in this. And given this is the round out of the Snyderverse DCU, it's quite nice that they've brought Michael Shannon back to play Zod, because he was sort of in the first movie of it as well. So it rounds it off quite well. Given that, I do sort of agree that it is a shame that they didn't go with Cavill for this. Although you could argue that having Cavill in this, because that super role is fairly central to the plot, it might have felt a bit more like Superman was overshadowing Flash, and it's supposed to be a Flash film. So I can sort of see a reason for not doing that as well. But in that sense, it is a shame. I was really stoked to see Michael Keaton as Batman because I grew up on that film, and also to see Ben back in there. And there was some very quick, interesting shots of Ben in a different batsuit. It's the blue and grey batsuit, which we've never seen on screen before. They've always gone for the sort of black or very dark grey. That I thought was awesome. And it seemed to work on screen as well in this context, because, I mean, we've seen the Adam West version of it, but I really like the fact that they actually use that in here. I thought that was awesome. So there are some stylistic things that I thought were very cool. I like the fact that they are sticking with a comic book story rather than trying to sort of make something up or take three comic books and jam them together, which is what they've done in the past, and it just doesn't work. Speed running to Doomsday was a horrible idea for the Batman v Superman movie. Overall, I am very interested in this film. You are right that there have been a lot of changes. I hope that that isn't that obvious, but I think it looks like it's going to be a really quite spectacular movie. And I'm trying not to get overhyped for it because we've had good trailers before and the movie itself has fallen flat on its face. So we'll see when it comes out in June. June 16th, it's due out. Mm-hmm. But if this is the sort of swan song to the whole Snyderverse and that version of the DCU, I think it's quite a nice way of going out. And then we're on to the Gun Saffron stuff. But yeah, I mean, Keaton and Affleck being in there, I thought was great. Sasha Calle looks really interesting. I know what you're saying about her introduction in this, and then if we don't get her in the other film, I don't know with that. Knowing the plot of that story, I understand why they possibly wouldn't use her, but we'll see. It could just be a one-off thing.
We're still supposed to have some sort of dark Flash, because I don't think Reverse Flash is in this film, unless he's in a secret scene that we don't know about. Or, although, given the fact this is your first proper live-action Flash film, you probably should have Reverse Flash somewhere in there, because he's quite integral to Flash's story. Is Ezra also playing Dark Flash as well?
Well, don't know. There are some suggestions that that's who that other Barry is. I've seen...
So like he becomes that later. Or something.
Or he's pretending the entire time. That may not be the case. Don't know. We're purely speculating at the moment, but that could be the Reverse Flash, just wearing Barry's face. That is maybe a possibility, but don't know. I'd be surprised if Reverse Flash isn't in there somewhere, because Reverse Flash is certainly part of the story in the comic book, but like we say, it is Barry that screws things up. It's him that seemingly screws up the timeline.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how all this plays out, but yeah.
I imagine we'll get another trailer as well between now hopefully explain a few more things. So yeah,
we will. Certainly.
Yeah, there we go. Some other very big news that came out, was it middle of last week? Is it Disney/Pixar is doing Toy Story 5, Frozen 2 and Zootopia 2?
Yes.
And announced it in the most casual way you possibly could.
Well, it came off an investor call, didn't
yes,
it, I think, which
yes.
is weird, that, because rather than doing a big announcement and then sort of saying it on the investor call or explaining a bit more at that point, they announced it as part of the investor call, which is basically them saying, we're all good, we're going to make you lots more money. This is why, because we've got all this stuff coming.
And, here's what we've got, yeah.
That's the sort of thing. It is a weird way to announce it, but I can't say I'm massively surprised that they're going to make more Frozen and more Toy Story, because they've been hugely popular franchises, so of course, why not?
The only one thing you really need to do in Toy Story 5 is just the Buzz and Woody reunion. I mean, that's the big, powerful kind of... I mean, it'll be emotional anyway, because Pixar know how to do that by this point. They've been doing it for well over 20 years. That's all you really got to do for that film. Whether or not they introduce new characters, or, you know, obviously you got Forky, who's new in there, you got Bonnie as well. You could technically... I mean, this could probably apply to other franchises. You could technically do Toy Story Forever, because then you
well,
could
yeah,
just...
Cause
the toys are never going to age.
Yeah.
Obviously, the voice actors will. But the toys never age. And once it gets to a point where the kid they're looking after gets older and goes off to college or does whatever, obviously that's what Andy ended up doing, you just hand them off to another young child and do it all over again.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of fair that if you're going to give a trilogy to Andy, you could do the same with Bonnie. Which would mean you'd need a Toy Story 6 as well. But
well, yeah, I'm sure
awesome
if Toy Story 5 makes enough money, I'm sure they'll do a Toy Story 6. And then you've got Frozen 3, actually, isn't it? Because they've already done Frozen 2. So
yeah.
Frozen 3 and Zootopia 2.
Did you see Zootopia?
No, I think I downloaded it and then still didn't get round to watching it because it was on one of the streaming services.
Film.
Yeah, it appealed to me. I just hadn't got round to watching it yet. You know what I'm like with movies. I have actually watched a film this week, but it's very rare that I actually think of sitting sitting down and doing it.
Yeah. You know, Frozen 2 is interesting as well. That kind of ended in a point where it's like, okay, sure, you could do a Frozen 3, but you're going to need to kind of come up with a new storyline. It's interesting with Pixar, though, because they have kind of, other than Cars and like Incredibles and Toy Story, and I guess you could say Monsters, Inc., although the second one's a prequel, they don't do a lot of sequels, but often come up with, I mean, like Elementals is coming out. That's going to be a new kind of thing. You had Luca, you're Turning Red in the last couple of years. Those are all like brand new things, which it must be hard to consistently come up with new ideas and not go over things that you've covered too much before. But I fully trust Pixar because I have no reason not to do so. I know Lightyear wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but I very much enjoyed it for the reasons I did.
And that wasn't really a sequel. It was an interesting kind of spin-off idea.
Prequel thing. Yeah. But no, Zootopia is good as well. Pixar have got a lot going on now because they've got Elementals to finish off, Toy Story 5, Frozen 3, and whatever else they've got coming out. Yeah, those are the things I wanted to talk about this week. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I finished off The Recruit, season one of that, which I really enjoyed. It's by the people that made The Rookie, and it is a bit like if you took Jack Ryan and gave it to the people that made The Rookie to make Jack Ryan, kind of. It's a sort of lawyer in the CIA who gets in way over his head, and that's essentially the setup for it. I'm glad they renewed that for a second season because it does finish in a place that needs a second season for it, so I'm happy that that got picked up again. There is a very interesting little cameo towards the end of that as well, which I won't spoil, but there's a fun little cameo at the end of that as well. Well worth watching, though, if you like those sort of lighter sort of drama, comedy, action things. The Recruit, definitely one to go and check out. That's on Netflix. Bad Batch, I realised I was a few episodes behind on that, so started watching that. That's really found its footing in the last few episodes. It feels like there's a point with Clone Wars where it suddenly sort of turned the corner, I think. I think it was season 2 or 3. I mean, it was a fun show, but it started to do longer, overarching stories, and they had one of those that digs a lot more into the sort of background of Star Wars and talking about the switch over from the clones to the stormtroopers. And I really, really enjoyed that. I think that's been a really, really solid show, Bad Batch. Speaking of The Rookie Feds started, which is the spin-off which they backdoor piloted last season. If you didn't see the backdoor pilot for it, it's basically the same setup as The Rookie. Rather than being the oldest recruit in the LA police force, it's the oldest recruit in the FBI academy. It stars Nicey Nash Betts in the lead role as Simone. She's a sort of former guidance counselor, and at the age of 48, she decides she sort of follows her lifelong dream to join the FBI. Introduces a bunch of sort of new characters. One of them's an ex-star of a TV show called Vampire Cop, and he's now gone into the FBI, so that's sort of one of the setups for it. They've set up this new rapid response team, which allows the FBI to basically take on a new case each week. It's an interesting kind of setup. I don't think it quite has the charm of The Rookie, probably because Nathan Fillion isn't a constant presence in it. And I mean, that's one of the things that makes The Rookie so good, is the casting for that show. What is quite nice is certainly in the opening episode, you're getting a few of the rookie characters pop up in this. So if they call the LAPD, it tends to be a character that you know from The Rookie that's coming in to help out the feds on this show. So there is some crossover, and it may just be one of them pops up for a scene and that's it. It's not like crossover territory. You don't need to have watched both shows particularly.
Right.
But if you watch one, they're swapping characters. So if they need a police officer, they'll pull somebody you know off the other show to bring in, which I think is quite a nice little way of doing it and sort of tells you it's a connected universe and all that sort of stuff. So opening episode, a little bit shaky, I thought, but I'll stick with it and see where it goes. Yes, enjoyable enough.
That's a bit like with the 911 shows, which I'm all caught up now with. There was like the 17 episodes or something for 911 Lone Star. I'm all caught up on both those shows. And now and again, they call on the people from the other shows to kind of show up. Both of those have been very, very good as well, with the Rob Lowe-led show. And then the other one, obviously, Angela Bassett killing it as always, because she is great in basically everything.
Yes.
For sort of comparable examples, because those are the only two sort of procedural shows I actually watch.
Yeah, I've been enjoying those. I am a bit behind on 911. I'm sort of picking up episodes as I sort of remember to go and watch them, basically. But they are all on Disney Plus, so you know. The other thing I watched was a new Sky show. I've only watched the first episode of this, but it stars Gemma Arterton. It's called Funny Woman. It's based on a Nick Hornby novel, and it's set in the 1960s. It's the story of a northern beauty queen from Blackpool who moves to London and tries to make it in the male-dominated world of TV comedy in the 60s. That's pretty much the setup for it. I'm really quite enjoying it. I think it is obviously based on a book. It's not based on anything in real life. You've got Rupert Everett in there who's playing a sort of theatrical agent who's slightly sort of past it, I think, at that point. Gemma Arterton taking the lead role. Really doing quite well. Very entertaining show. I mean, it's a similar kind of premise to Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in some respects. Mm-hmm. It doesn't quite have the snappy dialogue that Mrs. Maisel does. It doesn't have the Paladinos.
Get back to that show.
Yeah, that's a great, great show. And the Paladinos have this really snappy way of writing. It's the same as when they did Gilmore Girls. It's very fast-paced in the way they talk. Doesn't quite have that speed to it, but interesting sort of look at this woman that's in the 60s that is trying to break into this world. There's a sort of similarities between that, but they're very different types of show in the ways that they're presented. Solid enough story. I've only watched the first episode, so I can't fully judge it yet, but it's only six episodes long, the first season. So I am looking forward to watching a bit more of that, but that's on Sky. It's called Funny Woman. The other thing I watched was I actually picked up a movie. I watched Jurassic World Dominion. Have you seen this film?
Yeah, I really didn't like it at all. I remember speaking about it. I'm trying to think, actually, because I had three contenders for my worst film of the year. I think I actually forgot to put it on the list of it, because my contenders were Uncharted, Death on the Nile, and Black Adam, and I gave it to Death on the Nile. Just forgot to put it on that list.
Yes,
I suppose.
That memorable for you. And I get that entirely. I mean, I didn't hate it. It's just not very good either. If you're a fan of the Jurassic movies, you're probably going to have fun with it. There are bits of it that make no sense. There are bits of it like the dinosaurs get way, way too close and you're like, why aren't they dead? They really should have been eaten by a dinosaur at that point. That makes no sense at all. So there are problems with it, certainly. If you're a fan of the whole Jurassic franchise, it's nice to see the people from both Jurassic World and Jurassic Park in one place. I mean, that's entertaining enough.
I agree with that, yeah.
The story itself is fine. It's very set piecey in there's like bits of conversation, massive set piece, bits of conversation, massive set piece. I mean, it's fairly formulaic. It's not a particularly brilliant movie, but if you're a fan of the Jurassic movies, it will be entertaining enough for you. And if you want something to do on a Saturday night and you're looking for a film to watch, it's fine. I certainly wouldn't have run out to the cinema to go and watch it. I don't actually think the effects look particularly great either in it. I mean, some of the dinosaur effects looked very kind of hard plastic to me, but it's okay if you want to go and watch it. But it's not exactly a ringing endorsement for it. But if you're looking for a kind of silly Saturday night movie to watch and take your brain out for, it's perfectly watchable, I guess.
I wonder what they'll do with Jurassic now. Because you don't put a franchise like that to bed, do you?
Rest it for a little bit and then they'll come back with something else, I'm sure.
Leave it alone for a couple of years, but then bring it back with whoever's going to be the kind of action. Because Chris Pratt's kind of the action man at the moment, isn't
he? Yes.
I remember about 10 years ago when Jason Statham used to be sort of in a lot of those roles. Maybe not 10 years, but 5 years. I don't know, maybe they'll pick Tom Holland or something.
Yeah.
He would maybe slot into that sort of action man type of role. And they'll revive it or reboot it or do whatever with it.
I'm sure it will come back at some point, but yes. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So we start off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. Only one cancellation this week. It's Avenue 5, which has been cancelled after two seasons. I don't think that's a huge shock to anybody because I don't think it was quite landing as well as they hoped anyway. And then it was horribly delayed for the second season and been rumours swirling around that it probably wasn't going to get picked up. And then they announced this week that Hugh Laurie had gone off and joined another TV show. So that was sort of, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean he couldn't have done it, but it seemed like it was likely that it was going to be done, and then they announced that it was going to be cancelled after two seasons. So
is this that HBO space
comedy
hotel comedy thing? Yeah, I briefly kind of remember that. I think I remember it getting renewed. I don't remember seeing a second season pop up anywhere.
There is a second season. It's on Now and Sky right now.
Okay. Maybe it popped up and I glanced at it but didn't press play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. I love Amando Iannucci, and I mean, his political stuff like Veep and The Thick of It have been brilliant. I don't think this was necessarily his strongest work, but mm-hmm. it's still entertaining enough, and there were some nice little twists in it. I just don't think it quite landed. So we'll see where he goes next. But yes, yeah. Avenue 5 cancelled after two seasons. As that was the only cancellation, I did do a bit of a bubble watch, because we haven't done one of those in a while, just to look at some of the shows which may be on the bubble for getting cancelled and renewed. These are US shows. Big Sky, apparently, there's been some talk about whether that will be coming back or not. The live ratings on ABC are not good, it's fair to say, but it does massively well in the delayed ratings, so it is probably okay for a fourth season. If it's doing well overseas as well, that's something else to look at, but the live ratings apparently aren't great for it, which could be a bit of a problem. But I think given the delayed ratings are so good, it's probably all right. The Resident, which is on Fox in the US, rat runs on Disney over here. Season 6 finale was apparently designed so it could be a series finale if it needed to be. It's a bit worrying that the exec producer said they have got no indication about a renewal at the moment, one way or another. So we've got until May, really, before they make a decision with this sort of stuff. But again, I don't think its ratings have been completely stellar, so that may be coming to an end, but we don't know. The Goldbergs has really scraped through its last couple of renewals because its ratings have kind of been going down each season, as tends to do with some long-running comedies. But yes, really didn't have great ratings the last couple of times, and its ratings for the last season dropped 18%. So could be at an end, that, unfortunately, but wait and see. Over on CBS, Blue Bloods, probably all right, but it is a 13-year-old show and has a large ensemble original cast, which means it's an expensive show because they've been there from the beginning, pretty much all of them. Kind of expensive for a procedural, but it is also the third most watched drama on CBS behind NCIS and FBI. There are ups and downs from that. I doubt they'd cancel it out and out. If they did decide to bring that to an end, it's more likely to get a final season, even if it's a shorter run. And there's no indication one way or another. It's just given the age of it and the size of the cast, and they're all original cast. You could either see quite a big cast shakeup, but it's difficult to do with a show like that because it's based around a family of cops. So you can't really get rid of half of them. It's not like FBI where you can change the lead guy or a couple of the team members, or you can't really do that. When it's based around a family, you can't suddenly take one out and then bring in a cousin or something. It doesn't really work that way. We'll see how much longer that has in it, but it has been around for 13 years. And then over on the CW, all bets are off. I mean, the only thing they've renewed at the moment is All American. All American Homecoming, the spin-off, Kung Fu, Superman and Lois, Walker, Walker Independence, The Winchesters, which are all their scripted series. None of those have been renewed yet. So who knows? Very difficult to tell what will happen over there. The new owners seem to be trying to take it in a different direction. They've just acquired Live Golf for the channel, which, given the channel was supposedly aimed at a young audience, and then you buy Live Golf, is interesting. And they're doing a lot more reality stuff and cheap TV, basically. That'll be interesting moving forward.
You've got some kind of big ones in there as well, like obviously you've got Winchester's, which, you know, is a prequel spin-off of Supernatural. Which is obviously a massive, massive show. Superman and Lois, I mean, all the other DC TV has been kind of cleared away. I only watch one of those shows, which is Superman and Lois, so yeah. I suppose that's good. But just on the Big Sky things, I know we've just gone through these bubble watch shows. That had such a great first season, and then it did like this weird thing in season two where it kept on its same main storyline, but then introduced like a B, C, D, and E plot.
Yeah.
There was like four more additional plots that were introduced, which, although were interesting, thing as I was watching the episode, I just kept thinking, okay, this is kind of interesting, but why is it on this show?
Yeah,
maybe I'd get back to watching that and just like skip over those scenes and concentrate on the main scene, because none of these storylines were having any sort of like impact on each other. I do still possibly have the intention to watch that show, but it's on like season four now, so
I dropped off it, didn't you? Yeah, I dropped off it. I watched like the first half of the first season, which kind of wrapped up that main storyline to a certain extent, and then it just continued. I know what you're saying. It suddenly had this bunch of other storylines coming in, and it seemed to lose its direction a little bit. So I don't know. I may go back and watch some more of it, but yes, I kind of dropped off that. I enjoyed the opening bits of it, but there's so much stuff around at the moment, it's very difficult. Moving on to the renewals, a couple of things have been picked up. The Peripheral picked up for a second season, which I'm very happy about. Really enjoyed the first season of that, and definitely needs a second season, so I'm glad that will be coming back. That's the adaptation of the William Gibson novel that's over on Prime Video from the Westworld people. Worth going to check that out.
I really should watch that.
Yeah,
I really should. I keep not clicking on Amazon, basically.
Yes, I know what you mean. And Call the Midwife, they've announced, is being renewed for seasons 14 and 15, and they've already got season 13, which is going to be starting filming in the spring. So there's basically three more seasons. It's on air until 2026 at least.
Wow.
So ratings are through the roof. It's still doing incredibly well. So, I mean, hardly a great shot with the BBC have picked that back up again. Over on pickups and other news, that show that I mentioned that Hugh Laurie had gone to, it's called Tehran, and it's actually entering its third season on Apple TV. They renewed it for a third season. If you haven't watched this, it's a drama which tells the story of a Mossad agent who goes deep undercover on a dangerous mission in Tehran that places her and everybody around her in dire jeopardy. Hugh Laurie is joining as a South African nuclear inspector for the third season, apparently. Will be quite a central character in that third season. I haven't watched this. I don't think it's one that you've picked up off Apple either yet, have you?
I think I've scrolled past it a couple of times, but it's not one that I've not actually clicked on it or anything.
It's difficult getting past all the S shows on that because they're all so good. So yeah, that's Tehran though. So I maybe should go and check that one out. But Hugh Laurie's joining the third season of that. Star Trek Picard and Lower Decks, they've apparently done a deal. So they will now air on both Paramount Plus and Prime Video for the next seasons. So the final third season of Picard and Lower Decks, when it comes back in the summer, they will air both on Paramount Plus and on Prime Video. It basically means that all the Star Trek stuff will now be on Paramount Plus. Although, as somebody pointed out, they're saying everything Star Trek is now on there. Still missing is the 70s Star Trek The Animated Series, which isn't on Paramount Plus, and the Short Trek episodes aren't on there as well, I noticed, which is kind of annoying because there's still some of those which I haven't seen. Those were the little sort of 15-minute episodes that they tagged onto. Some of those were really, really good. Yeah, there was a couple of those which never actually aired over here. I was hoping that they'd be on Paramount Plus, but they're not. So hopefully they'll get added at some point. Moving on, there's some horse trading going on with a couple of other networks as well. Uncoupled, which was the Netflix series starring Neil Patrick Harris from the people that made Emily in Paris, that was cancelled by Netflix last month. That's now been saved by Showtime / Paramount Plus. That will now be airing on Paramount Plus for its second season. Whereas the Showtime Paramount Plus show Ripley, which is an adaptation of the Talented Mr. Ripley novels, which stars Andrew Scott, is moving from Showtime to Netflix. So they've just sort of traded shows backwards and forwards. Showtime in the US is getting absorbed into Paramount Plus, which will make no difference to us because all the Showtime shows air on Paramount Plus internationally, or certainly in the UK anyway. So,
but they have a tab or something, don't they?
Yeah, they will now be doing the same thing with Paramount Plus in the USA. They shed three or four shows last week, and it looks like this was one that they weren't entirely sure what they were going to do with. So they decided to sell it to Netflix. There was a little bit of news about The Boys because apparently there's been rumours flying around that the fourth season may be the last one. Eric Kripke, the showrunner, says it isn't. So he says season four is not the end. There will be more coming after that. So if you've seen rumours about that, they're not true.
How much of the comic books is there?
To be honest, it's so separate from the comic books at this point. It uses the characters, but none of the plot lines, pretty much. There's been little bits of the plot lines, but not huge swathes of it. The comic books are very, very different from a plot point of view.
Do you mean like Walking Dead different or like really, really different?
I mean completely different.
Okay.
So there are characters from the comic books which have been much bigger on the TV show. There are things in the TV show that were not in the comic books at all. I mean, they've taken the basic premise but turned it into something completely different. So
Okay.
It's more like sort of comparing Lucifer to the comic books, which it basically took the premise of it, but turned it into a completely separate thing. But there will be more of that coming. Channel 4 has ordered a new Friday night series called the Joe Lycett Live Show. That is a working title. It may change, but basically sounds like it's going to be, do you remember, you're probably too young, but the old TFI Friday Chris Evans series.
Vaguely.
It sounds like it's going to be that sort of thing. It's going to be running 10 p.m. slot, I think. Six episodes, I think they ordered, but it's going to be a sort of that kind of live, big musical guests. That's what they're comparing it to. That is coming. Don't know when yet, but they picked that up. There was a show called Love and Death, which hasn't actually aired either side of the Atlantic at the moment, but I think it's a HBO Max series, and ITVX have picked it up in the UK. It's another thing from David E. Kelly, who's the guy that made Big Sky, and it stars Elizabeth Olsen, based on the true story of a Texas housewife called Candy, and it follows two church-going couples enjoying small-town family life in Texas until somebody picks up an axe. That's the plot for it. Huh. It sounds like it could be quite a sort of interesting, slightly quirky murder, true crime sort of with a comedy element to it. I kind of get the feeling. So, but looks kind of interesting. Elizabeth Olsen is great. David E. Kelly has a pretty solid track record. So it's called Love and Death. Be airing later this year on ITVX and on HBO Max in the US. That one. Hmm. One other thing, there's a couple more spin-offs after we mentioned a couple of spin-offs last week for, what was it, Billions and Dexter. There's another show at it as well now, Bosch, which is the Amazon series. Prime Video ran the original Bosch, then Bosch Legacy, which is basically the same show slightly remixed as far as I could tell, because it's the same cast or some of the same cast. Bosch Legacy runs on Amazon Freevee. And they're now looking at two spin-offs. One is following Bosch's former partner, Jerry Edgar. And the other one is follows Renee Ballard, who is another character that hasn't actually shown up in the TV show yet, but is a focus of a number of the books written by Michael Connelly that are all set in the sort of novel Bosch universe. Because there's like, I don't know, 20 books or something based around Bosch and various other characters. So I think Jerry Edgar's had some where he's the lead character, and this Renee Ballard does have some where she's the lead character. So they're looking at a couple of other shows which are set within the same universe, but will have other characters as lead, so you can kind of cross them over and stuff. They haven't actually said whether that's going to be Amazon Freevee or whether that's going to be Prime Video, although it seems ridiculous to do one show on Freevee and then put the other two on Prime, but we'll see. They're in development at the moment. They've not been picked up, so we'll let you know if they actually get picked up to series. Speaking of spin-offs, though, the mother of all spin-offs, which is The Walking Dead, which has got like a whole bunch of shows in development right now, they did announce some more cast and some actual details about the Daryl Dixon series. Daryl Dixon, who we last saw in the finale of the main show, driving off into the sunset. He was on the search for Rick, wasn't he? I think that was the idea. The new series, because one of the things we've been like, we knew the new series was set in France. And it's like, well, how does he get to France? So they've sort of skipped over that bit because he washes up on the French coast. He's struggling to piece together how he got there and why. So presumably he was on a boat and somehow made it across the Atlantic and washed up in France, but he conveniently seems to have forgotten how he got there, which is an interesting way of starting it, some sort of selective amnesia. But the spin-off tracks his journey across a broken but resilient France as he hopes to find a way back home. During his journey, though, the connections he forms along the way complicate his ultimate plan. Thoughts on that?
I just imagined a scene in my head where he gets knocked off his bike and then you cut to black and then you open with him literally washing ashore somewhere, but in a somehow different country. Every single person who's basically talked about this show particularly is like, well, how does he get to France? Like that's been sort of everybody's question.
It's not
question.
Like you can hop on a plane. Yeah.
No, not in this particular type of world. And his bike's only going to get him so far.
Yes.
So, and I know there's helicopters and stuff in the series, but
you can't take a helicopter from the US to France.
No, you'd need, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's like the biggest kind of,
no.
I mean, as long as he's just there, whatever, it's a kind of point of curiosity about how he gets there. But yeah, as long as it's just him because we've tried to guess sort of, okay, these three spin-offs and that, like, how are they going to fit together? Because you've got Daryl on his own now. He was originally going to have Carol with him, but Melissa had to pull out because of scheduling and all kinds of things like that, and because she didn't want to be in Europe. Then Rick and Michonne, and then Negan and Maggie, which has still got some interesting questions towards it. It's going to be interesting, like, the, okay, what scene are you opening on? Like, is he, like, when we do the, whether it's a cold open or you do a Walking Dead intro and then you cut to Daryl, is he on his bike when we first see him? And then does something happen and, like, you cut to, or would it just be, I don't know, the opening scene is just him washed ashore and then they just kind of go from there?
Yes, that's the sort of thing. I mean, presumably at some point we will find out how and why he ended up in France. But, I mean, it's possible he was on a boat, the boat went down. But I mean, even so, you kind of think he must have been heading that direction, because it's still a long way to wash ashore in France if you were somewhere around the American coast. So, I mean, who knows? But hopefully they'll explain that somewhere along the way.
What do you think of this?
Seems like a slight cop out to not really explain that and not have him, you know, okay, he needs to go to France for a mission, to just have him sort of wash up and not really remember what he's there for, which seems to be what the synopsis implies. It seems to be a mystery just because, whereas I would have preferred them to have had, like, he's gone to France because of something to do with the virus, or, you know, because we know that there is a lab in France, we know that there are variants of the virus and that sort of thing. So I'll reserve judgment to see how they handle it.
At least it's got a goal in mind.
Yes.
Because when we first heard about this, we were just kind of, okay, Daryl's a fine character, but why was the first kind of question. We're going to need, like, a trailer, I think, to get a good gauge on this.
He's not completely on his own. They have got a bunch of French regulars in there as well as some other characters. So don't know anything about the French regulars other really than they've some random names and some actors. Anchari, who was in something called The Last Deadly Mission. Eric Ebony, who was in The Transporter 3, apparently. Laka Blank Francard, who was in something called My Night. Roman Levy, who was in The Tunnel. And there's a newcomer called Louis Shuguzi, I think. I'm terrible at pronouncing names, but I don't know anything about those characters. They're all French actors, so they're going to be playing the locals, basically, in this. But they've got names, we just don't know who they are. And it's not like you can go, oh, well, this is somebody from the book, because this is completely original. They have announced some other cast members and gave them a bit more information about it. There's Clemens Posey, who was in The Essex Serpent, and Adam Nagatis from Chernobyl. They are taking lead roles alongside Norman Reedus, so they're going to be prominent characters. Posey plays Isabel, a member of a progressive religious group who joins forces with Daryl and finds herself confronting her dark past in Paris. Nagatis plays Quinn, a displaced Brit who has become powerful in post-apocalyptic Paris as a black marketeer and the owner of the Diamante, a sexy underground nightclub. Those are the two characters that we do actually know a little bit more about. So it's apparently going to be around Paris.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see Walking Dead properly in a different country, because up until now, every character's been American or at least had an American accent. So I've obviously got some British actors in there that had to put on American accents for a bit of time. That's one of the many things I think that we've talked about on the Walking Dead podcast is, like, hey, if you want to keep this as a franchise, which AMC will want to do, try exploring some different countries. Yes. And this could be a good somewhat way to do that, I think, as well.
Yeah, I mean, so, I do like the idea that it's set in France. I've said before, you know, a Walking Dead UK would be an interesting one to do, you know, because obviously this is a global thing. So looking at other areas would be quite intriguing.
Do you think, because I'm sure AMC is probably looking at what's going on with The Last of Us, not necessarily in terms of story or tone, but just rave success and reviews and ratings. I wonder if that will cause them to alter anything in any way at all.
Yes, I don't know.
Because surely they'll look at that and think, we've got something in the same genre. We want this success and ratings.
Yeah. Problem is that they don't have Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin behind
it. Right. And they have Frank Darabont, but...
Yes. He's not likely to come back, is he, at this point?
No.
And they've upset Kirkman and... You know, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I did wonder the same thing as well, whether not that they're going to kind of rip anything off, but whether it will have any effect on this at all. I suspect not. I suspect they'll be like, you know, well, we're established. We, you know, we have a format. We're going to do our own thing. But We'll see. I think they're very different shows. They do both have sort of zombie-related stuff in it, but there's huge differences in the way they're presented. And with Last of Us, it has a very specific story that it's telling, and that story is written, and they're following it. With Walking Dead, it's past all that. So whatever they do now, they've got to make up themselves.
So imagine they announce, hey, here's a new Walking Dead spinoff about an older guy and a younger woman that he has to escort across the country.
Yes.
That would be suspiciously interesting.
Yes. Moving on to more spinoff things as well. This one at Prime Video, and sort of follows on from something we mentioned a few weeks ago. Sony are developing this Spider-Verse set of TV shows. They mentioned one before, which was based around Silk, and that's going to be the first one to come up. There is apparently another show in development, which is a Spider-Man noir show. Like the original comic book, this show is set in its own different part of the Spider-Verse. It's set in the Great Depression era in 1930s New York. Unlike the comic book, because in the comic book, it's a version of Peter Parker. It's a variant of Peter Parker. Whereas in this, it's going to be an older, grizzled superhero character, which raises some interesting questions that are moving on. The character first appeared in the comic book in 2009 as part of the Marvel Noir line set in this alternate universe. The Peter Parker variant in there does get his power by being bitten by a spider, but the spider is inside this ancient idol that gives him a vision of a spider god who promised to give him powers. He then wakes up inside this cocoon and uses his powers to wage war against the criminal underworld of New York City. So, I mean, the basic premise is the same, except the fact that it's the Great Depression era, 1930s New York, is the main kind of difference. And we have seen versions of the character before. He was in Ultimate Spider-Man in the animation, voiced by Milo Ventimiglia. He was also in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, voiced by Nick Cage. And I sort of found it interesting that they said they're going to go for this sort of older, grizzled superhero character. And Into the Spider-Verse, he was voiced by Nick Cage. I wonder whether they're thinking about getting Nick Cage into to do it, because the TV shows are under the control of Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who are the people behind the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse animated movies. It seems to be that version that they're going for, which has popped up in the animated film. So maybe you could get Nick Cage to do it. I don't know. Interesting premise, I guess.
Yeah, I think this sounds really, really good. A lot of the kind of ideas around this are very, very interesting ones. It's interesting to see what Sony are sort of trying to do with Spider-Man, because obviously you got the Venomverse thing, which some people like, but is it's kind of its own thing. And then you've got this Silk thing here, then you've got this noir kind of series here. One of the things I think I said about the Silk series was, okay, it's great that you're able to make these shows and films and whatever without getting to Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, the like original quote-unquote one that we know is in the MCU. So how can you either use maybe Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and do something there? But of course, you do have the Into the Spider-Verse thing where you've got all these different versions of Peter Parker. So you could maybe just do that instead.
Yeah.
I don't know who's got the rights specifically for like Miles Morales. He's another character that we could...
I would guess Sony does, because Sony have said that there's about 900 heroes and villain characters that are connected to Spider-Man. So it seems to be everything connected to Spider-Man in the comic books is under Sony's control. So I guess you could use Miles.
Maybe you could just dip into that pool of different Spider-Men and just sort of tell different stories. It depends what exactly Sony wants to do, but I think this is a very good idea to add to this in this way.
Yeah, I do quite like the sound of this. I mean, a sort of superhero thing set in 1930s New York, I think, is a really kind of interesting idea. The person that's behind it, or the person that is writing it, is Aaron Uzel. He has worked on a number of different things. There's a movie called The Lost City, which starred Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum. That's the most recent thing he's done. He also worked on the Mortal Kombat movies, 22 Jump Street, The Cloverfield Paradox. He actually wrote the presumably now dead Supergirl film, which was going to star Sasha Calle. I'm guessing that isn't happening anymore. But he's also writing Detective Pikachu 2 as well, apparently. So it's kind of all over the place in terms of sort of tone and things for those films. But he's an experienced screenwriter. I mean, you could argue whether he's a good screenwriter, I don't know, but I have not seen many of those movies. But we'll see. But he's apparently the person that's developing the project. Moving on to more things that are spin-offs or sequels or all that sort of stuff. Stars are stepping back to Rome and are developing a sequel to Spartacus. So remember those Spartacus TV shows?
Yeah, I think so.
Which I really enjoyed. They were great. From Stephen S. DeKnight. They're basically looking to set up a sequel to that. So after the defeat of Spartacus and his rebel army, the drama will depict a new tale of treachery, deceit, and blood unfolding beneath the foreboding shadow of Rome. The show will explore uncharted territory and new journeys of the original series' iconic characters. So it's going to be new people, presumably, and maybe some old faces thrown in there as well, because not everybody survived. There was a lot of people that got killed off in that Spartacus series, particularly in the last season. So we'll see. But it has got Stephen S. DeKnight back running it, and DeKnight actually, once he finished with Spartacus, went off and ran Daredevil. So, you know, that's not a bad set of things to have behind you. So Blood and Sands, which was the original Spartacus series, that's debuted in 2010. That was with Andy Whitfield in the title role. But Andy, if you've been following any of this, unfortunately was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in March of 2010, which led them to delaying the second season. So they created this prequel series called Spartacus, God of the Arena, to allow him time for treatment. Unfortunately, he passed away. And before he died, he did say he wanted the show to continue. And they recast the role with Liam McIntyre in the lead as Spartacus and did two more seasons, which was Vengeance and War of the Damned. But it was a really great show. I mean, it was sort of full on blood and other body parts on display pretty much every single episode. But it was a really fun show to watch. Did you see any of this? Yeah.
No, I don't think this is going to kind of be in my wheelhouse per se. But if it does well, then that's good. And maybe I'll check it out if something pops up for it.
Certainly, I think that's going to be one worth looking at. If it's on Stars, they've not actually picked it up to series yet. They are working on it. But they did send out a press release saying they were working on it, which is usually quite a good sign that thinking that they are actually going to make it. Stars in the US, which probably means it's Lionsgate Plus in the UK that will run it if it does get picked up to series. And there was one other bit of news that popped out last week as well, which was John Cleese is working on a revival of Fawlty Towers after 42 years off air and two seasons. So, I mean, Fawlty Towers is an iconic sitcom, obviously, from 42 years ago was when it ran. It ran for two seasons of six episodes each, so there are only actually 12 episodes of the original show. It's often described as being the perfect sitcom. I mean, it is very, very funny. It still pretty much stands up. There's a few bits that are not exactly politically correct these days, but I mean, it's still very funny. This new iteration comes from John Cleese and his daughter Camilla Cleese, both writing and would be starring in the show. It would explore how Cleese's over-the-top, cynical, misanthropic Basil Fawlty navigates the modern world. There are not any plot details yet. It's said to focus on Basil's new relationship with a daughter he never knew he had, as the pair attempt to team up to run a boutique hotel together. They have said that it wouldn't be set in a small English town. It would be likely set somewhere exotic, like a Caribbean island. So a small hotel that would have guests that were incredibly wealthy is the sort of idea they would do it. Plus, it means that you could shoot it somewhere exotic, I think, which probably appeals to John Cleese, I imagine, being able to go and live on a Caribbean island for half the year. But that is the idea for it. I'm in very much in two minds about whether this is a good idea or not, because you could end up trampling over your legacy. I don't know. It could be one of those things that could be brilliant. It could be one of those things that it does one season and people go, we'll just have to forget that ever happened. But who knows?
Yeah, I'm vaguely kind of aware of Fawlty Towers. I think I've heard of it. I think I saw this news pop up and thought, well, that's kind of interesting. But if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. But let's see how it turns out. Yeah.
Yes. You know, you do your classic reviews thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Go and find Fawlty Towers somewhere, because I'd be very interested to hear you do a classic reviews on it. Because like I say, it's the half hour episodes. There are only 12 of them. So it would be an interesting one for you to go and do on classic reviews, that, because it is such an iconic sitcom. I'd be interested to see whether it still works or not.
Okay. Yes, one that I could consider, definitely.
Yes, certainly. So that's all the news for this week. Just some time for some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week. We have a big show starting on, well, Prime and on Paramount Plus on the 17th of February. We have Star Trek Picard returning for its third and final season. Very much looking forward to this. The reports that are coming out about it seem to say that it is really good. It will be on Prime Video. You can go and find it, and you can also go and find it on Paramount Plus, but that'll be on the 17th of February. Also on Prime Video on the 17th of February, Carnival Row, second and final season of that, which I'm quite looking forward to coming back. That was the show with Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne, sort of fantasy noir thing with fairies and stuff set in this sort of war-torn version of this neo-Victorian city. Really enjoyed that. Very, very good first season. It's been forever to get the second season on air because pandemic kind of got in the way. But yeah, 17th of February for season two of Carnival Row. League of Their Own returns for another road trip. That is on the 17th of February as well. That's at 9 p.m. There is a new Apple show, which we mentioned a few weeks ago, called Hello Tomorrow. That's starting on the 17th of February as well. This is sort of set in this sort of retro future world, kind of think Fallout before the bombs dropped. That kind of retro future setup. The series centers around a group of traveling salesmen hawking lunar timeshares. So looks really, really good, this. I'm very, very looking forward to that. So that's called Hello Tomorrow. That's on Apple on the 17th of February. Last Week Tonight start with John Oliver returns for season 10. That's on the 20th of February at 9 p.m. And The Equalizer returns for season 3. That's on Sky Witness on the 21st of February at 9 p.m. That will be back for season 3. So that's everything coming this week on TV. Matt, if they want to find you, where can they find you?
Find more of my podcasts over on entertainmenttalk.org or your favorite podcast platforms by searching for the same name. TV, games, films, main eye podcasts. Wasn't too well over the weekend, so we did skip Gaming Talk and United Cast this weekend, but we'll sure be back with those soon. Got the podcast about Toy Story that I mentioned, got the podcast as well about Atlanta that I mentioned, and some general TV and film stuff. Of course, we're doing The Last of Us at the moment, which is kind of the big thing. So yeah, there's a bunch of just different podcasts out there for different stuff. But yeah, TV, games, films, main eye podcast over on there. You can find me on Twitch if you'd like to at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays for video game stuff. That's me.
Cool. So go and check out Matt on entertainmenttalk.org. For other people involved in the show, you can find Bex at twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S, and she is streaming every week, so you can go and find stuff over there. There's retro games, there's slightly more up-to-date games these days. She's been playing lots and lots of different stuff. There's also just chatting streams and all sorts of other weird and wonderful silliness going on over there, so go and check that out. Daryl, you can find over at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series that you love which are shot in Canada. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk and find all the latest airdate information. If you want to get in touch for your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website, post find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye. Bye.